So the final topic was health promoting work environments, and I was remembering last year at the Health Tank we talked a lot about getting people to move more, and there was somebody, I can't remember his name, but he was from out west, and it seemed to me every 10 minutes he had us up exercising. Robert Hebden led the group discussing health promoting work environments today, and he's with the Daysville Health Faculty of Management here at McGill. Welcome, Robert Hebden.
Thank you, Peter. I'm one of the recent recruits of Lorette's. I got sucked in about a week ago. But I must I have to say, after one day today, it's very seductive, the whole process, for someone that has an interest in social justice. It's nice to hear that word today. This is the workplace that we talked about. I'm going to kind of just focus on the range of wellness programs that we saw in a whole range of companies, from Pitney Bowes, the large corporations, Microsoft. Actually, my favorite was SOCAN, Society of Composers and Writers and Musicians. They had a day off to clean your office. And I was thinking, maybe at McGill we should do this. But so we had large organizations, small organizations, mostly North American. We didn't really get into too many examples outside. And what always occurs to you when you're looking at a series of cases is that what went through my mind, and this is what came out of that session in the morning, some very interesting cases. What are the conditions under which this works? What's motivating companies to implement these programs? And I think actually, you know, and we heard a lot of cases that went to that point as well, but what's the flip side of that? Where is it not feasible to do this? What are the conditions for it? It just occurs to me that there's another side to this. Under what conditions might companies not be willing to implement wellness campaigns and so on? So that we think that probably that, I think point number one up there is probably the most important one. See if we can define some kind of conditions under which it works and firms innovate. And why do they innovate? And why do they not? We had a fairly lengthy session and discussion and debate about what to do about migration. Seems that globalization is increasing the flow of migrants. There's a much greater demand today for migrant workers. Migrant workers are particularly vulnerable because they're typically not covered by local laws. And even where laws are, in many countries, laws are not enforced, even for their indigenous population. But migrant workers have no chance. And the question is, who's responsible for them? Who's going to look after them? Who's going to change their conditions? How are they going to be changed? We had a debate about whether it should be government, or whether in the Qatar example that came up, the petroleum company in Qatar actually decided to do something for them. But that was only in their corporation. That didn't apply to the rest in society, and there was an even larger number not covered by the case. And then the other side of this that came up was the role that the ILO could play in this, for those, I'm sure everybody knows, the International Labor Organization. Tripartite organization, again, you've got government, labor, and management, and they have an expertise in this area. They also have, one of the other problems that we identified was the cultural values problems that exist around the world. You know, we can't impose our values on the rest of the world. They don't have the same values that we do. The advantage, it seems to me, of an organization like the ILO, and it sounds like a commercial, I don't get any money for this, I don't. But the ILO has that expertise. They are dealing with, on the ground, problems of child labor around the world, as many of you know. Finally, the last part of this, and I think it's an appropriate point to end on, but I'm going to flavor it a little bit differently than the way it's phrased. How do we balance the rights of all parties, employees, organizations, and governments? Clearly, seems to us anyway that there were some competing interests here. The framer of this session was particularly provocative and interesting. He reminded us that a safe and healthy workplace is a human right. It's part of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights in 1946, for workers to have a health and safety workplace. So when we say competing rights, it's pretty hard to trump that one. So, you know, I think, again, the ILO came up in that context of perhaps one way out of this, one way to balance and to regulate in that area. But, you know, the guest also made the point, and I'll just stop there because I know it's been a very long day and you all want to go to sleep, that the interests of the corporation are in competition to some extent with the interests of the individual. But workers, if it's a human right, this ought not to be the balancing act that we're, I guess, talking about here. You can't balance an interest where a human right is at stake. So I'll just end there and wish you well tomorrow in your exercise. Unfortunately, I can't be with you. I have to teach. I have to get paid here. Thank you.
It is. I think everyone would agree that the four people who accepted this challenge did an excellent job of trying to respond to the task that they were assigned and give some sense of the ideas that came out of the convergence workshops. All I'm going to say, perhaps by way of the all but one conclusion, is that, you know, I don't think we should underestimate the challenge and the possibility of the kind of convergence and collaborations that many of us began today. It isn't easy talking across disciplines. Sometimes you can spend the whole day and think you've understood each other only to discover that you maybe didn't quite. You know, these are whole worlds of different knowledge, different kinds of understanding. So, you know, I think we would very much like to see this as the first step in a really dynamic collaboration, one that's really set its store not just on good ideas and science and policy, but actually bringing that through to new ways of educating different kinds of people and actually taking it right through to action. So it's not something we should expect to do even in the kind of action-packed days which we've learned to expect from such occasions. And I think we'll look forward to creating the sort of online collaborations, satellite events, forums. I think there's all sorts of ways that we would hope to see this conversation sustained from these groups that started today. That's all I'm going to
Thanks, Wendy. Can we give everyone here a round of applause and the people who worked with them today? Does anyone have a burning question that can't wait until tomorrow? No? Okay, so let me just leave you with three thoughts. Robert mentioned how seductive this process is. I'm a veteran of these things. And part of the seduction is that there's no us in them for the next 48 hours. I mean, that was one of the things that really struck me from the first one through to this one, that there is talking across sectors and across interests. So that's the first thing I just want to say about the event for tomorrow and the next day. The third one is, don't waste this opportunity. It's going to be over before you know it. This is a remarkable group of people in one room for 2 days. So I just encourage you to fully participate. And if you have questions, to ask them. It's when it's over on Thursday, you'll be tired, but you'll sort of think, wow, what was that? What went on for those 2 days? So really participate as fully as you can. And the last thing I say to every group every year, Montreal is way too easy to have too much fun in. So don't stay out too late tonight. We start at 8 o'clock in the morning sharp. Okay, so thanks a lot again. Welcome, everyone, and we'll pick up tomorrow morning.